Hebrews chapter 10, beginning at verse 19. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is, his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with a full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who has promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as we see the day approaching. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our first letter is, let us draw near to God. Oh, come on, it's better than that. Let us draw near to God. We're here on a Sunday to draw near to God. Yay! There we go. It is a new year, come on. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, wants a relationship with us. That's massive, I find. The God, the creator of the universe, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, wants a relationship with you, me, and everybody outside these four walls. That's massive. But it's not unusual. The Bible is full of stories of people who wanted to draw near to God. Our story of Epiphany, I nearly said the wrong word then, Epiphany is about journeying, about these three wise men who journeyed to meet with God, to draw near to God who came into creation in the form of Jesus. But if you were to go back a little way into the Old Testament, drawing near to God was a little bit more complicated. So, if you were drawing near to God in the Old Testament, you might need some of these things. Sam, can I have my volunteer? Never be a vicar's child. So people are trying to go and meet with God in the Old Testament. And there was this special place, as we heard in our reading, a special place where God was. And it was called the Holy of Holies, and it was right at the back. And only one person could go in there once a year to be close to God. But there was a problem. If that person wasn't sin-free, he might actually not make it out again. And that was a bit of a problem for the people of their time. So what they did was they came up with a system. They put a bell on the person, and they'd get a rope, like this, and they'd tie the rope around this wonderful priest. You can lift your arms up. I'm not restraining you, okay? And basically, you wanted to go and meet God. You know what? And for good measure, because God is so awesome, you can have a crash hat too. Nice and safe. And then off you'd go. Go on. And then off you go. And you'd got the rope. And then because you weren't allowed to go into the Holy of Holies with him, if anything went wrong and you heard the bell stop, if you went in, you'd die. If he fell down dead, he was stuck in there. So if anything went wrong, you could pull him back. Brilliant, thank you. And that was drawing near to God in the Old Testament. Thank you. But the thing is, give him a clap, he's just been made a fool of his dad. Thank you. Health and safety trip hazard. But God still wanted a relationship with everybody, and that was true. But he wanted to get rid of that danger. And each one of us has a heart, I hope. Each one of us has a heart. And it's in this special vessel we call a body. But there's this thing on the top. And this thing keeps God from us. Do you see that? Oh, it's precarious. Don't lose God. And the thing is with this is our sin. It's a boundary, something that keeps us away from God. It's the things that are more important, where we say, I am more important. And God couldn't just come to us like that, because God had to make sure we hadn't got any sin. And so he sent Jesus. And through Jesus, we were washed. I'll put that back down now. And if we give that a little bit of time, hopefully, it should work, he says. It's going, it's going, it's going. Our sin is being dissolved by the power of Jesus. Go on. Go on. There we go. You never know how nervous you are when you do something like that. Have I put too many bits of paper in place? But the good news is that Jesus got rid of our sin. Jesus broke down the curtain that was separating us from God. And through that, we can draw near to God because we know Jesus. But knowing Jesus means we have to have a sincere heart. You see, our heart's in here still. And we have to have a sincere heart. And that's a really strange word. But it just means something that's true. Our hearts have to be true for God. We still need to be washed clean, but Jesus does the washing. The problem is, though, as you saw, that was a couple of layers of paper. What happens if I get lots of sheets of paper? What happens if I say, sorry, God, I'm in charge, no to you? Sin. What happens if I say, all of this, all of my schoolwork, all of my friendships, all of my music tastes, going to concerts, all those other bits and pieces, I'm just too busy for you, God. I wonder how long it would take to break through. Having a sincere heart is about being true to Jesus, about being true to God. And through that, we can draw close. When we have a sincere heart, we draw close to the Lord, who is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love, and full of faithfulness. And with that, that is our letters for this year. So all those things, our first resolution for this year, isn't about getting fit. And it might be that that was one of your resolutions. Our New Year's resolution isn't about eating less fatty foods and crisps. That's one of mine. The problem is, our first priority should be to God. So our New Year's resolution perhaps should have been, let us spend more time in prayer. Let us spend more time in church. Let us spend more time away from those things that distract us. So perhaps our resolution for this year should be to say, let us draw near to God in prayer.
As we, in the all-age planning group, were thinking about today's service, I was reminded about a time when I held unswervingly, or very tightly indeed, onto something. Last September, Ken and I were on holiday in a little village in Scotland, and we discovered within about 3 miles we could walk to an isolated place called Inveraw Smokery and Caff. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a place where salmon and other fish are smoked and are delicious to eat. You can see the counter looked lovely. We were looking for some lunch, I think. There was also a lovely cafe with a promise of a good cup of coffee. So off across the fields we set, and according to the Ordnance Survey map, there was a footbridge across the River Aw that would take us there instead of us walking 5 miles round the river. What the map didn't tell us was that it was a suspension bridge made of chain, which moved about quite a lot. And the cafe stood on the opposite side, you could see it, of the bridge. By the time we got to the bridge, it was beginning to do that Scottish rain stuff. And it was quite windy and getting chilly. And I just started that day with a cold, so I was really looking to get to this cafe. Here's the bridge. But the river did not look like this. As following the rainstorms and the high winds of the previous week, it was more like this. But bravely, I climbed the steps up the side of onto the bridge, only to find the handrail did not continue. So up the steps I went. But the sides were kind of set at an angle, and they came about up to here on me somewhere, which made me quite nervous already. it was very narrow. It looks like you could get big feet on that bridge, but actually you can't. With size 8 shoes, heavy walking shoes, my feet were bigger than they normally look. So you could only kind of do 1 foot in front of the other. You couldn't kind of do 2 feet together. So it was hard to turn round and go back. And by now, Ken went on in front, as he always does. And as I tried to follow, I just froze in fear. My legs wouldn't move. My tummy was feeling upset and I was shaking. I couldn't go forwards and I couldn't go backwards. As I looked in fear at that water below, because I don't swim either. So Ken reversed backwards towards me after I yelled to him. And I got hold of his trouser belt. And I held on as tightly as I could. I shout, "Don't go too fast," because he's off on his trot. So he slows down. "Don't go too slow, you're going too slow, don't go too slow." I did not look left or right or up or down, just straight into Ken's back. And very unswervingly held on to him until we got to the other end. And the only thing that got me across that bridge was the thought of that cup of coffee. That day I knew what it was to hold unswervingly onto something, because we had to come back that way too. And that's how we are to follow Jesus. But our hope and his promise is that there will be much more than hot coffee at the end of our journey. We will be with him forever. So what kind of resolution can you and I make today that will help us in not allowing fear or other distractions from holding unswervingly onto the hope we have in Jesus and professing it?
Let us draw near to God. Okay. It's a Sunday. Come on. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we have. And the final one is, let us spur one another on. So, we've got our three wise men. They've seen this star. And they've actually drawn near to Jesus. They've come to God in the manger. They had faith and they followed. But now, like all good stories, they have to go on. And we have to go on. So our third one is spurring one another on. There's no point in drawing near and not going and telling. So, our third talk, let us spur one another on. We live in a society of labels, I think, where everybody wants to put something on you and say, "I can understand you because you are that. You're that person, you're that ethnicity, you're that gender, you're that learning thing." I couldn't find a better word. Who here watches TV? I think there's more than that. No, it's participatory, come on. Who watches TV? What's your favourite TV programme? Random. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. NCIS. We'll have to have a chat to these guys later. Anyone else? Anyone's favourite TV programme? Game of Thrones?
The Midwife.
Okay, nobody went with the ones I wanted. Okay, that's okay, we can work with that. We live in a society of harsh words and criticism. And if you watch any of those TV programmes, I hope somebody would say, like Strictly Come Dancing, or The Bake Off, or X Factor, or Britain's Got Talent, it always amazes me. No one picks any of these. I mean, is it just my house? I mean, what? I get bombarded. But it always strikes me how we always like to have the bad judge, don't we? There's always that one judge who's on every single programme who's actually really negative. He's really cruel, and he's actually not a very nice person to those people. And so the question is, how do those people feel when they've come out there, given their all, and then that person's gone, "You're rubbish, you're no good, you're never going to amount to anything." And these are the judges we have in every single programme. We've got our first image. A company set up an experiment. Has anyone seen this experiment? No one spends as much time on Facebook as I do then. Okay. So, an experiment was undertaken. So, I'm not advertising, but IKEA went into one of their shops and they got two plants, identical off the shelf. These two plants here, they got identical off the shelf. They took them to a school and they placed them in containers. They had exactly the same nutrients. They had exactly the same amount of water. They had exactly the same amount of sunlight. Can you see which one's healthy and which one's not? I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? The one on the left is not doing well. The only difference between these two plants is the one on the left was bombarded with negative criticism. The one on the right was bombarded with positive messages. That's the only difference between these two plants. For 30 days, and that's the impact 30 days had, they were perfectly healthy on the shelf. 30 days of ongoing negativity, 24 hours a day, pumped in by audio, and that's what happened to that plant. The first plant wilted, gone yellow, started to droop. The second plant, reasonably healthy, and actually doesn't look too bad. There's a bit of a problem with this for me, though. So obviously we can say that how we talk to one another is important, but we've made an assumption. These plants can't speak English. They have no idea what words were being said to them. So actually, it's not just about our words that we use to spur one another on, but it's how we say them too. Because if we say the right thing, but with the wrong intent, we're not saying anything at all, are we? That's the same as probably what happened to that plant. Heaton had no idea it was being called useless, but it picked up on the tone of how it was being talked to. Because plants can't speak English. Can we go to the next picture? That's what one looks like in the wild, actually. So when you said the first one was unhealthy, the second one was reasonably healthy, they're actually pretty bad compared to what they actually should look like. For the plant, it needs to grow. It needs to grow in its right in habitat, its right habitat. It needs the right light, the right food, the right amount of water, the right soil. It needs to be at home in its home climate. It needs a positive environment. And the same is true for us. If all we hear all day long is criticism, you're not praying enough, your prayer life isn't very good, you're not reading the Bible often enough, how does that affect us? Even if we say the right thing, saying you're doing really well, but we say it in the wrong tone, how does that affect us? We know when people aren't being sincere, don't we? We talk about a sincere heart in the first one. We know when people aren't being true. And that affects us. And it can drag us down. And it can make us wilt spiritually. But spirituality is about growth. It's a journey of growth. And I want to say to you that nobody in this congregation should ever measure their growth by looking at someone else. You never look at someone else's growth, because you are on a different journey to that person. My growth is different to your growth, is different to my son's growth, is different to everybody else's. What works for one doesn't work for all. But what does work for all, and what is true, is how we talk to one another. We have to use the right words to encourage one another forward. Otherwise, we will just wilt. We'll go a bit yellow, and we'll end up looking like that first plant. I wonder what would happen if that experiment was continued, and then you swap the audio over. I don't think it's too late to save that first plant, to bring it back to life. But you've got to change its environment. Being in the right environment is the most important thing. And that's what we were told this morning in our readings. Don't drift away from church. That's what the reading in Hebrews said, like some have done. But actually spur one another on. Use the right words, with the right intent, with the right tone, and we will all grow and flourish together. So I want to put that to you today. One of our New Year's resolutions should be, let us encourage one another. Let us spur one another, and let us approach one another as people made in God's image. Because each one of us is. Each one of us is hardwired for worship, and each one of us has the ability to grow into that, given the right conditions.